Dirty Books.
Hello, and welcome to Shh, We're Reading Dirty Books. I'm Kalina.
And I'm Saylet.
And we are happy to have you back for our new episode.
Woohoo!
We wanted to start out this episode because we realized last time we forgot to rate the book. So yeah. If anyone who has been with us all these episodes, you remember last book was Angel's Blood. And while we liked it very much, we had a good conversation about it. At the end, we forgot to do our dirty pleasure rating and tell you exactly where we think this book falls.
Yeah, I mean, it was literally midnight when we were done. So we were tired.
And so
it was past our bedtime. So we just skipped over it. So,
all right. So we wanted to start off this episode by giving you our dirty pleasure rating for Angel's Blood. What do you think?
I think that our rating is confusing.
Sure it is.
Okay, it's not consistent. Let's just go with that. I'm going to say I liked that last one. I can't come up with a thing, but I'm going to go with a 7 on this one.
7?
Yeah, it was sexy 7.
Sexy 7.
Super sexy 7.
Sexy 7. I just want to say 7 too, but I think we've been listening back through some of our podcasts, trying to come up with, like, what books we've rated what and, like, maybe figure out why. Because, again, like Saylet said, it's kind of confusing. I think I might have a propensity for 7s.
I mean, unless it's we like, absolutely don't like the book.
Oh, no. The ones we hated, we gave low scores to.
Yeah.
but 7 is, like, my safe, like, that was a fun book.
Yeah.
So I kind of want to give it a 7 as well.
Okay.
I just don't feel comfortable giving it an 8. It wasn't that great. I mean, it wasn't like mind-blowingly fantastic. But it was super entertaining and I liked it. So that's just a nice solid 7.
Yeah. It was a nice solid 7. I mean, I still like the dragon books more than all of the other books that we've read, so.
Which one of the dragons?
Oh, that's true.
The first dragon book with the dragon fires, or the second one with Dragon Bound? That were not the same, they're not part of the same series.
Right.
The one with the unicorn.
What?
It's the first fucking dragon book.
It's the first one. Because I don't remember the second one.
Remember where she was a unicorn. He's a dragon.
This last one
was the angel.
Yes, sorry.
It's Angel's Blood.
That's right. Because she turned into an angel. I was mixing up the angel and the unicorn.
Because both of them fly.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway.
Well, anyway, so sorry about that. We we totally skipped over it.
So if you have been pensively waiting, that's probably not the correct word. I was actually patiently bated breath, hoping we would correct our error from the last episode and tell you what we rated that book.
Mm-hmm.
Well, success.
Yes.
You're waiting.
There. You go. You've waited long enough.
And if the rest of you are going, I didn't even notice that you didn't do that. Well, neither did we. So, there you go. So,
yep.
What book did we read this episode?
We read Succubus Blues by Rochelle Mead. It was narrated by Elizabeth Rogers. And yeah, you do your thing.
I do my little snippet of what the book is about. So, lovely. This book, actually, I don't have as fast of a synopsis because it isn't our typical, you know, girl and boy meet and spend the rest of the book.
Right.
Like, tussling with each other over their affections and eventually end up together. This is a completely different story.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a little bit of a different plot for once. The Succubus books are based on Georgina Kincaid. She's the main character in the book. She is a succubus. She is a couple millennia old, probably. Or maybe not a couple, but it sounds like she's from ancient Greece, maybe, and basically did a deal with the devil and became a succubus, lost her humanity, became an immortal being who now has to use sex to gain energy, and in doing so, you know, she's on the side of evil, which is supposed to kind of gain souls, so encourage humans to sin and thus strengthen the ranks of the evil underworld, as opposed to, you know, the good side, which I guess is supposed to save human souls. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
Whatever, they don't really get into that too much. So she's living in Seattle. She's got a cast of really fun, adorable sidekick, like friends, some vampires, an imp. Her demon boss is named Jerome, and he looks like John Cusack. It's one of my favorite things
from
this
book.
That's so
awesome.
And she's struggling at the moment with ennui. She just doesn't want to be a succubus anymore, really. She hates it because she doesn't like tempting good guys to fall and to, like, become bad and to sin. But it's really, honest to God, her job. Like, her boss, Jerome, is the archdeacon of Seattle, and he makes her do this. They have quota to meet. It's almost like bureaucracy run amok. So she tries her best to just sleep with, like, bad guys already. Guys who are already, like, full of sin anyway. And so she just, like, the scum of the earth she tries to pick. So she starts, in this book, she kind of gets into this tangle with a couple of different guys. She's always tried to avoid dating good guys because she can't have a real relationship with them. In the act of sex or any romantic touching or exploration with her, they lose parts of their soul, parts of their life. So she tries to avoid that because she doesn't want to harm someone who she likes or might eventually love. She also has a lot of baggage. So throughout this book, she kind of struggles with that. She's getting together with a guy named Roman. She's really likes this author named Seth, who, you know, she works at a bookstore, so he's her favorite author, and he comes to do a reading, and she kind of starts a flirtation with him. Meanwhile, there's this big, like, supernatural threat that's terrorizing the town, but that's really a side point, and we don't need to talk about it because it gets confusing.
You want to know about it.
Good versus evil, they fight, there's a battle, whatever. But anyway, it's kind of this whole, like, she can't make up her mind who she's going to, like, be with or if she should be with anyone. She keeps trying to, you know, say no to everyone, but she keeps getting drawn in for different reasons to different guys. So so it's kind of a, like, Georgina and Roman versus Georgina and Seth versus Georgina trying to just be alone. So that's the book. And it's good. We recommend reading it.
She starts off this book corrupting an innocent soul. And it's kind of funny because she was talking to Hugh, which is, he's the imp. Which at first I thought was kind of funny because I was just like, oh, he's also sort of her pimp. But she doesn't collect money or anything like that. He doesn't collect money and they're good friends.
Yeah.
But she goes to this, like, introvert 34-year-old virgin that
lives in his parents' basement and works at a GameStop. And he's decided that it's just 35 is too long to be a virgin.
Yep.
So he has sold his soul to Hugh, the imp, in exchange for sex with a demoness. One of the upsides to being a succubus is she can shapeshift. So she can look like anything she wants. So so she has to take on the guise of a demoness from hell to satisfy this virgin's first desire that he's willing to sell his soul for, which I don't know.
Yeah.
Aim higher, guys.
I mean,
the first thing that crossed my mind is, like, one time. You didn't at least say, like, weekly for the next, you know, 10 years or something. Yeah. Shoot, like, if you're going to sell yourself for anything, shoot higher, dude. That was 6 minutes.
So. Exactly. Yep. It's literally six That's minutes. What she said, and that is what minutes. She said.
I'm like, oh. Yeah. Poor guy. Yeah. That made me feel bad for him.
I did. And I was kind of feeling sorry for myself, too, at the moment, because when he was telling Georgina how old the guy was, she said, ew, 35? So old. Or something like that. And I was like, I just turned 35. No. I don't feel that old. I think her
bigger concern was the 35 and still a virgin.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's what, as we've discussed in previous episodes, we have an issue that virginity is just a construct and it shouldn't matter.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. So that's how we start this book. And so, yeah, she does occasionally break her rules, but only for her friends and only because then they're supposed to owe her favors.
And she's got a really good group of, like, a tight-knit group of friends that she's got here. They're all...
They're fun. It's a fun cast of characters. You got two vampires and the imp, and they hang out, and, like, they're the underworld of Seattle.
Yeah.
The demon sides of Seattle, whatever. And I like, this book, Rochelle is very good at constructing characters, I think.
Yeah.
Like, even ones that aren't main to the plot, she gives them depth, and they're interesting. They make you want to read more about them. I really love her boss, Jerome, is always hanging out with an angel named Carter.
Yeah.
And it's so reminiscent. I don't know if anyone's ever read it, but it's like Good Omens, the Neil Gaiman, Terry Pratchett book, where there's Aziraphale and Crowley, who Aziraphale's an angel and Crowley is a demon, and they hang out all the time in London, and kind of like they're just best friends because who else are you going to hang out with when you're eternal and immortal and have been around since the beginning and will be around till the end? Yep. You kind of just make friends, even if they're on the other side.
Even if one's a demon and one is an angel.
You gotta talk to someone.
I love Carter.
Carter's awesome.
At first, I didn't know if I was going to like him, but I really love him. The narrator, Elizabeth Rogers. Oh, my God. She did
really
awesome.
It was really good. I had actually read this book before as a real physical in the world book, not as an ebook or as an audiobook years ago. And I realized while listening to this that her narration is so much better than what my internal monologue for Georgina was. I had her voice pitch much younger. Oh, and yeah. It's so much better this way. Yeah. I was like, oh, this is a much better voice. Whatever I picked for her was not great.
I liked it. I liked Georgina a lot, too. I wasn't quite sure how I was going to like her at first because I didn't really know what a succubus was. Mm-hmm, I mean, mm-hmm. I know just a little bit siren, succubus type of thing, but mm-hmm. the character that she gave them and the storyline and stuff behind it was pretty cool. I liked it. So I liked Georgina a lot.
She was kind of tormented, disaffected succubus. She does her job, but very kind of crappily. Jerome's always on her case for like half-assing her job because she doesn't try to corrupt people. Mm-hmm. But she does have to sometimes. Also, because she physically needs the energy boost. Yeah. She can't go that long without energy boost from a sexual encounter because she'll weaken.
Yep.
So she has to do it. So she does it for herself. But then she, you know, tries to pick those soft targets. Those people who are already kind of damned. Like, the best example of it is the owner of the bookstore she works at. Mm-hmm. So her boss, ostensibly Warren. Not her direct boss because she's an assistant manager and she has a manager, Paige.
Yeah.
But
he's the owner.
So in a sense, he's the everybody's boss. Yeah, he owns the box, and he could fire anyone he wanted to.
Whatever he wanted.
But she has an ongoing sexual relationship with him, even though he's married, because she can kind of use him to get the fix she needs without doing any real damage.
Right.
Because he's a bad guy. I mean, he's fucking sleeping with his employee and is a married man. Like,
yeah.
You're a bad dude.
He's a bad dude.
You suck. Mm-hmm, but. Mm-hmm. So it's such a weird part in this book because you're like torn because I hate him because I'm like, ugh, gross. Then she's like, every time she sleeps with him, she steals a little bit of his life.
Yeah, so that she can survive on her own. Yeah,
he's dying because of his bad habit.
Right,
so
right.
It's kind of like, well, yeah, you fucking deserve this asshole.
She's just the walking karma for him.
Yeah. Basically, so, no, it is perfect.
Yeah.
You know, if he was doing it with anyone else, it wouldn't have that effect.
It wouldn't have that effect. Yeah, no.
So that's an interesting piece of this book. So one of the sex scenes in the book is her fucking her boss in his office.
That is one of the four.
Three and a half.
Three and a half.
It's hard to count the virgin because that one's not really a sex scene.
Which is different than what we've read in the past because before it was always just the sexual tension between the two main characters. And then finally they get to bone and then it's just sex with the same person a couple of times throughout the book.
We get three different
descriptions. Yeah, I mean she gets four, but three of them are described. Mm-hmm. So that was really cool.
It's really, yeah.
I liked it.
At least in comparison to what we've read so far. Mm-hmm. We could end up with more books like this. Who knows? We maybe haven't even begun to tap the surface of this genre.
That's right.
But it is definitely good to get something kind of that breaks the mold. Mm-hmm. And following her and making her the center character of not just this book, but future books to come, means that there's less focus on, like, all the other books that seem to be, like, destined mates for life.
Right.
Whereas this is not, we're not dealing with that. There's not like, for her, she's already immortal and eternal, and she doesn't think she can find that. She has like mentioned throughout the book that she's occasionally tried relationships with other immortals, but one, she gets no fix out of it. And two, you know, she just doesn't seem to like them all that much. And they seem to have character flaws. Like, all other vampires seem to be douchebags.
Yeah.
She likes the two she hangs out with, but they're the only ones.
Yeah.
You know.
And they're friends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? And, so, I don't, you know.
But she does have that typical characteristic of being afraid of finding that one or falling in love. But I think it's because of those reservations, because she doesn't,
her entire life and structure is dictated by a mistake she made at, like, the age of, like, 20-something when she was a real-life human being.
Yeah.
So she is back in ancient Greece, she's young, she gets married, she loves her husband, they're together for a couple of years, it seems like. This is all told to us in broken pieces throughout the book, so it's not one coherent story, but they love each other very deeply, but he seems to maybe not express it as well as she would like, or they don't communicate it very well, And so she starts kind of eyeing his friend, who's hanging out with her a lot more. Her husband's always at work, and she's not feeling very secure because she doesn't have a kid. And at that, you know, in that time period in ancient Greece, if you're 20 without a child, you're probably barren. And her husband just doesn't seem all that interested, like it doesn't bother him that much. He's like, oh, it'll come with time. He's not as. So anyway, through all of this, those are her own justifications. She ends up cheating on him, and it, like, breaks him.
It breaks her, too.
Well, it breaks her, too. It breaks everything. It breaks their family. It breaks, you know, everything. But mostly, I think she's concerned with how broken he seems. Yeah. And he seems really depressed, and he won't even talk to her. And so she decides that it would be better if she just, if no one ever knew she ever lived. Like, if she just was erased. Right. If she never existed
in their lives.
And so that's her deal. And in order to accomplish that, she has to give up her life, not only her soul, but her life, and become immortal and become a succubus. Mm-hmm. And so she does that. That's the deal she makes with an imp back in her time.
Yep.
So, you know, cheating is a terrible mistake, and it's incredibly harmful, and it hurts people. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that sucks. And making, like, feeling like you've hurt someone you love so much and seeing it on their face is, like, crushing. Yeah. But she followed it up with an equal mistake of giving away her eternal life.
Yep.
Like, so she spends the rest of eternity doing things she doesn't want to do for hell.
Yeah.
Like, and so she's an interesting character because it's obvious she doesn't want to do this. And there's this, like, some moments between her and Carter, who's the angel, where he's kind of trying to get her to see that she's not beyond redemption.
Yeah.
Like, maybe hinting at future redemption for her if she can kind of just figure out.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's a big bargain she made, and it's really probably unfair. Like, 100% unfair. Because, like, that was one lifetime, and she's now has to live, like,
she has to live
just for one
for
small
that
mistake. I mean,
that one mistake.
Big mistake. Yeah, cheating on your husband. Don't do that.
Yes. PSA for the episode.
Don't
cheat on your
significant other.
Significant other.
Otherwise, she'll sell your soul to you and live as an immortal beast.
But so let's talk about the relationship that she does start to have with Roman and Seth. And those are the two main guys that she's not really seeing.
She tries to not see either of them, but ends up in what is basically kind of dating relationships with both of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
She tries to put up all of these barriers, but doesn't.
It doesn't work.
Like, Roman, one night, she's at the bookstore and her boss, Warren, is kind of trying to basically say, let's go back into my office and have sex. Let's do that. You know, come on. You don't have anything to do. And she's had a bad day and she doesn't feel very good. She's really embarrassed about herself. She stuck her foot in her mouth a couple times.
Yeah.
And so she's not, like, feeling very great and she doesn't want to do it. And instead of, you know, again, this is why people in power don't get to have relationships with their subordinates, because it's a bad fucking idea, because he was, like, pressuring her to do it and she didn't want to and she didn't have an easy out. So she spotted this guy from across the room and was like, that's my date. And, like, roped him into being her date. And, like, they left the bookstore together and that turns out to be Roman. And then he's kind of like,
he played into it.
Well, we'll have a date. And she's like, no, I don't want a date. And he's like, well, I just saved you. So you kind of owe me a date.
And he's so charismatic and he's funny and
he's smart,
handsome.
He's witty.
Yeah. He flirting. Brings her Lucky Charms and...
Oh my god, no. So this is the best scene.
It's awesome.
So she has to build a bookshelf and she somehow, like, runs into him or he calls or something and wants to hang out or date and she's like, no, I have to go build a bookshelf. Or is it after the it doesn't matter. It's all important. It's not important. She's like, I have to build a bookshelf. And he's like, well, I'll come do that. I'm the master at handicrafts. Handyman work.
Mm-hmm.
And so he shows up at her apartment with a 6-pack of Mountain Dew, 2 bags of Doritos, and a box of Lucky Charms.
Fuck,
and they build a bookshelf. Like, the worst, most ugly, useless bookshelf
ever. Oblong bookshelf.
But I was like, I don't really like those particular junk foods, but the idea of someone, like, roll it up with junk food to, like, let's do this was so fucking endearing. Mm-hmm. Like, he didn't bring fucking wine and, like, flowers and smooth, you know, jazz, because she had said they aren't dating and she's, like, trying to put up these boundaries, but he did show up with fucking snacks and junk food.
Love it.
I'm
fucking,
like, yes,
awesome.
Show up in my house with fucking pizza rolls and Starbucks, and it's fucking on.
It's on. This shit is on. You have no idea.
That is, like, perfect.
You had me at, oh, okay. Like, just fell down.
I brought you terrible not food.
I know.
And I'm like, yes. All I want to do is sit at home and eat junk food and watch movies.
It just sounds so great. It sounds so great. It's, like, the best thing ever.
So, I thought that was delightful.
Yeah.
And then, so there's, that's him. That's Roman. He also dances. She loves dancing. She has a passion for dance. So he takes her out salsa dancing. He dances, swing dance with her a couple times. So he's just, he is all charisma and charm. Then there's Seth, who writes her favorite series of novels. She's, like, obsessed with these novels. And he's coming to their bookstore to do a reading. And she's very excited because she's going to meet her favorite author. And she runs into this random guy at a coffee shop in the bookstore. And she has a kind of, like, flirty conversation with him. And it turns out to be Seth. Or the author, yeah. Seth Mortensen. Mm-hmm. And in doing so, she basically, like, said a bunch of things about his fans not being real fans. And, like, she just was very snarky. And,
when,
like,
she put her foot in her mouth was all about that right there.
So then she's, yeah, so then when she realizes it's him, she's feeling all self-conscious, like, oh, I criticized how he doesn't write enough books, they don't come out fast enough, and his fans are stupid idiots who ask the same questions all the time. Yep. So she's feeling really bad, but he's, like, really, he's kind of the opposite of Roman.
He's the real opposite 100%, of Roman. 100%.
Yeah. He's quiet
except
and shy.
He's still cute. Like, he's cute, yeah, but he's not handsome. Like, she would explain, I don't even know what they look like anymore.
No,
but,
I can't either.
But she did say he's cute and, like, a, you know, just like,
yeah, but he's, like, you know, nerdy pop culture t-shirts and flannel and quiet,
doesn't like
shy.
Coffee, doesn't like caffeine, doesn't drink pop, doesn't...
He doesn't drink anything. He won't drink alcohol and he won't drink caffeine and that... Like, just putting these two, like, on paper in that fashion, I'm like, red fucking flags for you, dude.
Well, when it's that strict that he won't drink
What's
coffee.
What's wrong
Eventually
with you?
He does, though. He does. Have a white mocha or...
Decaf.
Something. Oh, fuck, you're right. It is decaf.
Yeah. He goes for it because it's her favorite drink is a white chocolate mocha.
Yeah.
Which... Oh,
forgot about that.
So sweet. And they're so saccharine. I'm sorry.
It is really
and everybody
sweet.
Who loves them, they're whatever. I'm so glad you guys like your drinks. But they're super sweet. And so he decides to drink one because that's what she drinks.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, no, that's not your entry into coffee. But again, it's a decaf. So
yeah,
it's not
okay.
Coffee. So I
wonder,
I don't know. I have questions for people who are, unless it's a religious choice. I guess Mormons don't drink caffeine
they don't
or alcohol,
drink caffeine.
So I guess if it's a religious choice, so be it.
He didn't seem religious.
Nope. No, it's for probably not a religious
and
choice for him.
He's a writer. You would think that he would need that type of a brain power. However,
that's what she said.
I do have to say this, though.
What?
I love coffee. I love coffee.
Mm-hmm.
I drink it almost every day. I don't need it to function. I like to think I need it to function, but
no,
it has no effect on me. None
no,
whatsoever.
That's why we drink coffee like, at all hours
yeah,
of the night.
Yeah, all hours. Of, we'll have it right after dinner while we're playing cards and just hang out.
And we all go right
out.
To bed.
We go right to bed. So, but when I want it to affect me, when I want it to help wake me up in the morning or to, you know, to start whatever up in my brain, it doesn't work. So maybe he thinks, I don't need caffeine because it doesn't do shit for me.
I don't know. I believe there's maybe something more. He's, like, maybe he's a serial killer. No, hear me out. Here's my theory on this.
He's a little...
Maybe if you're super uptight and, like, refuse to let yourself loose at all...
It's true.
You're hiding something. Like, he will not drink. He goes out to bars with them and sits there and doesn't drink.
He doesn't do
and
anything.
And he... Okay, also, people... He's a fictional character, so I get to be judgmental about this with fictional people.
Yes. He's not a real person.
Again, if you're a recovering alcoholic and choose not to drink... Like, that's good. Like,
yeah,
I'm not
different.
Against
yeah.
all people who don't drink. I'm not saying you have to drink to be interesting or anything. I just feel like he was so very strict about all... Like, I... You know, he didn't drink and he doesn't do caffeine. And it's like... What are you hiding? What are you afraid will happen if you let your guard down just an iota of a bit?
Because
it feels like there's a mask that you're like, I can't let go of reality.
Right.
You know.
Like, he's afraid that when he does drink or something, something's going to come out.
So I'm saying he's a serial killer. Because if you're a serial killer, you probably don't want to get drunk.
Probably.
Because you might tell other people you're a serial killer.
It might come out.
So I bet you they don't drink all that much. And except for, like, the ones that are out of control and then they're drinking and doing drugs and killing.
Sure.
Yeah. I think there's two types. There's probably, like, more than two types. Let's not talk about serial killers.
No, we're not in that. That's not our podcast. It's
a different genre of podcast.
Different. Way different.
So anyway, we're moving on. So yeah, so Seth is like hanging out with her. They do coffee dates, mm-hmm. kind of. Again, he doesn't drink coffee.
Well, she's assigned to, so he decides to move from, I don't remember what
Chicago.
State, Chicago to Seattle. So now he's closer to his brother. His brother and his wife and his family live there.
They're like 28 children.
Yeah, they have like 500 girls. So she's assigned to, from the bookstore, assigned to pretty much show him around. And he has become their in-house author?
To hang out at the bookstore and write.
Yeah.
He uses their coffee shop to write. And somehow... But the manager really likes that.
Yeah.
She, like, thinks it's gonna, like...
Attract more customers.
Customers if stuff. They have a famous author using their door mm-hmm. to write. And I'm like, oh.
Yeah, so she's pretty much, like, forced to hang out with him. And she doesn't really know what to do with him at first because
he doesn't talk.
Do anything. And he doesn't talk.
Or drink coffee.
And she
does eat ice cream.
And she'd already, like, stuck her foot in her mouth by saying all the things she did before she found out he was who he is.
Oh, God, yeah.
And so now she's all awkward around him, and he is just awkward, period.
Yeah,
so
he's socially inept. But he writes her delightful emails. He's a writer, so he's really good at writing. He knows how to put things into words. He just can't do it on the fly, verbally, with you in a conversation. Mm-hmm. So he, like, says nothing all day. They hang out and barely talks, and then he goes home and at like 5 a.m. writes her, you know, pages long email.
Yeah, and they're like, so nice. They're beautifully written. And it's just like a little bit of talk. Like, there's nothing to it. Just nice.
So so she's in this.
She still feels some type of attraction to him. Not only because he is her favorite author.
Yes.
There's something about him that she just can't.
They
put
feel,
in there.
You know, he feels comfortable, like familiar, like souls, and he's constantly taking care of her.
Yeah.
So she's kind of torn between these two guys mm-hmm. and also her decision to avoid dating nice guys. So she doesn't want to date either of them because she doesn't want to drain their lives.
That's true.
So she's trying to say no to both of them, but also she doesn't want to be mean.
Right.
And she doesn't want them to hate her or think she's crazy. And she keeps trying to change her mind. And it's like the fucking... It's our podcast and women's problems, like, in a nutshell. And I'm like, oh my God, she is our podcast.
She's the epitome of it.
Exactly the things that women typically, like,
yeah.
you know, turning someone down without being seen as crazy or, like, just regardless of why you're doing it, it's hard and she can't quite make that jump because mm-hmm. she can't explain to them. She can't be like, look, I'm a succubus and if we date and kiss, I will suck your soul out and mm-hmm. you will die early.
Mm-hmm.
I will steal your life. Well, that would definitely be a reason not to date, but she can't tell them that, so instead she's just like, I don't date. Well, that's nobody believes that excuse.
Right.
That excuse doesn't believe, especially because she is fucking gorgeous.
Yeah. She shapeshifts herself into a very, very...
Her chosen form is petite and giant-breasted and, like,
just
willowy.
Sexy.
Just, like, everyone is constantly telling her how sexy she is, and so at one point, the angel's like, well, for someone who doesn't seem to want attention for men, you sure picked a form that gets attention. And I guess that's a good point.
He is right.
You know, if you are trying not to, then
don't, you know.
She's sending so many mixed signals even to herself. She cannot decide internally. She's so confused.
Yeah.
And I think that's just, it's such a good character to, like, explore because sexuality is hard and women, like, you know, dating and life and figuring out what you want in life and, like,
it's hard. You throw yourself at somebody, you're considered too easy and too ready and willing. You're a slut because you're just ready to go for it. But if you're standoffish and you don't want to talk, then you're a bitch and you don't. you're not their type or anything. So we're just, there's no winning.
It's so hard. And no so winning. She's like, all of it is just her. She's like, this is difficult. Mm-hmm. So her life is hard and she mm-hmm. keeps fumbling through it. Yeah. So, I don't know. It's fun though. It's a good book.
It is a good book.
There's one particular night, like when she agrees to go on a date with Roman. She kind of is like, he just wanted one day. He was like, just one day, and I promise I'll never bother you again. So she goes out, they go out dancing, and then they're going to go to her friend Doug's band.
Concert.
And so she had previously decided that she couldn't drink when she was around Roman, because if, you know, the last time they'd gotten together, they had a drink or two, and she just let down her guard too much.
Yeah.
Exactly the thing I was saying.
Yep.
I don't know if you're a serial killer, you can't drink. So she was going to not drink at all that night, and he kind of talked her into a margarita at the Mexican restaurant, and then they went salsa dancing, and they had mojitos, and then they had tequila.
Yeah,
and then
they had a lot to drink.
Beer at the concert, and she was fire drunk. At one point in there, she says, like, each interaction with Roman seemed to push past another boundary. So she's trying to set these boundaries, and then she doesn't. She doesn't stick with them. She keeps making excuses or reasons why to not. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, he's pushing her, too. He's encouraging her because he, you know, wants to get past those boundaries.
Yeah, yeah. He wants to
and bone. So I think that's something that we should talk about, because it's kind of apropos topic right now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's the Me Too movement happening right now, which is people, women in particular, but also, you know, just anyone who's suffered harassment, sexual harassment, rape, and all of that. But there's the kind of softer edge of that that we're starting to see in stories where, like, the Aziz Ansari story. Thank you. Yeah. Wow. Those are where a woman went online and wrote up a story of a date she had with him.
Yeah.
And how uncomfortable it felt. Yeah. For her, and how she seemed to go past all of her boundaries. Mm-hmm. On this date. And that's, you know, it's not necessarily the same as, like, it's definitely not the same as workplace harassment or rape.
Right.
Or any of those things. But where, you know, it falls on that spectrum of interactions between men and women where they maybe don't go at towards your expectations.
Right.
And, like, how do we handle that? And trying to talk about this, because it does happen. I think it happens a lot more than people realize.
Oh, yeah.
And even in this book is a perfect example of, you know, before the date started, she had this idea.
Yep.
Of what she was going to be willing to do. And by the end of the date, she's doing a lot more than she had planned.
Yeah, she's doing it differently than what she had planned.
Yeah, so she wasn't going to drink. She got drunk.
Mm-hmm.
She wasn't going to kiss him or anything. They go into a full-on makeout section, and she loses it because mm-hmm. she's afraid she's going to hurt him.
Yep.
Now, that's a different like.
Well, that's a different part of the story.
Not
yeah.
How women in real life feel about
right.
encounters. We're generally not the one who's like, oh no, I might hurt him.
We're not succubus.
But,
so.
Yeah, we're not sucking souls out, no matter what some men think of women. but she ends up having to, like, flip out and, like, run out of there and, like, behaves in ways that she doesn't plan to.
Right.
So, I don't know. I don't have a place to go with this conversation. I just thought it was important that we bring it up and, like, talk about. Like, have you ever had a date where you were like, I didn't really plan on this. This went further than I wanted to or was comfortable going, and my boundaries got blurred or pushed past.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the biggest thing is it really is communicating what it is that you're expecting. I mean, you don't start off a date with, okay, I expect us not to hold hands tonight. We aren't going to kiss. We're not, you know, you don't start off a date saying that, because you still want, hopefully, you know, obviously you're going on this date. You want it to try to go somewhere, or you're looking for it to go somewhere. So you don't start off the date by saying, I don't kiss. I don't do this. We're not going to do that on the date. You would hope that there is always just that known, I don't know, maybe a common sense that it's not always going to go that far.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to explain it. So I once went on a date. I think it was a date. I don't even fucking know. It was in college. I was at the campus. It was freshman. I was a freshman at college. And I went to this party with this guy. I don't even know what kind of party it was. I think it was a frat party. I have no idea anymore. He had complete expectations. He knew what he wanted to ask me out for. I also knew what he was trying to go for. That was not what I was expecting. So we went into this party and we got there. He was drinking. I don't drink. I didn't know this guy. I was just like, you know, trying to open myself up and experience the college life. I did that. I didn't like what was happening. So I asked him to go home or back to the dorm room. And so he was like, okay, I'll take you back. He wasn't drunk or anything, but I was like, hey, let me drive your car. I've never driven a stick shift before. He's like, well, then you can't drive my car. I'm like, no, let me try it. Which is a lie. I totally drive a stick shift. I did that so that I could drive myself safely back to the dorm without him crashing in and doing whatever drunk. And then he follows me back into my dorm room. And so he starts kissing me and he tells me he's never been with an Asian girl before and that's his ultimate fantasy. At that point, I was like, okay, now I know that this is bad news. So
I said, that's just a fetish then.
Yeah, it's crazy. And I was like, you know what? I don't know what you think is going to happen here. And at this, I didn't have a roommate at this time because she'd left second semester. So I had to dorm to myself. So I was also vulnerable in that sense. I didn't feel like I was in any danger. I didn't think that he would have hurt me in any way, but he was definitely pressuring me. But nothing happened. He kissed me a few times. He tried to make out with me. And then finally I was like, dude, I'm gonna go to sleep and you can stay or you can leave. And he left. And that was it. And then he tried to talk to me again the next couple of days in our macroeconomics class. And I said, I'm sorry, dude. And I just ignored him for the rest of the time. So it's hard because you want to communicate that, and without me saying no or this is not going to happen, how is he really supposed to know without using, I don't know, common knowledge or common courtesy or I don't know.
Well, I think you were in a lucky situation that you, like you said, you didn't feel threatened.
Right.
Like,
right.
You know, even though you were alone and in a dorm, like it could have been
worse.
Worse.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of women feel the other way. Like, they don't know whether saying no is going to end up in a more serious retribution. Right. And so there's that go along to get along. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, right. I've tried to non-verbally indicate no, and I've tried to use what... Well, again, I think it comes down to men and women communicate differently.
Yeah.
And we've been trained from birth yep. to communicate differently. You know, I think women rely much more heavily on nonverbal communication, body language, like pulling back of the head or, you know, pushing hands away. Things like that speak much more, like speak volumes to women that I don't think men have been trained to pick up on or have been actively trained to ignore. Dependent, you know, like just push past their resistance, you'll get there. Yeah. Like that's kind of a thing men teach each other.
Yep.
And that's part of what, you know, movies and TV and society tell men to do. Like, you can get past resistance. Hell, even women, there's a certain, we've been told to be pursued, like, and that we're supposed to like being pursued,
right.
And men are told to pursue,
yep.
And it's like, it's just gotten us to a point where it's very unhealthy,
it is.
Like, relationship-wise, and it causes trouble, and it causes relationship, like, dates, like, the one that woman experienced with Aziz that made her uncomfortable, and he, you know, obviously saw it from a different perspective. Right. And now it's a topic of conversation and it's very important. And, you know, in this book kind of showed it. Like, she felt pressured past all of her boundaries and ended up reacting badly. And she got really super drunk and, you know, ran out and yelled and screamed at him and said horrible fucking things to her friend Doug.
She did.
And threw up all over Seth's house. Yeah. And, like, I mean, she did. Like, that was the hardest scene to read because I was super embarrassed because I was like, every time I'm too drunk and, like, act crazy, I'm like, no, it's so embarrassing to be that drunk and to, like, do those things. And you're just like, God damn it. I really wish I had.
Did you have flashbacks?
Oh, of course. Like, to every time I've ever been drunk. I'm like, oh. Like, wild embarrassment.
Right.
Just waves of it. And I actually don't think I've ever done anything all that embarrassing, but I just feel like I have.
Sure.
Like, as soon as I no longer feel in control, or, like, as soon as I know I'm past a safe point of drunk, I just am embarrassed. Like, I don't know what I've said. I don't know what conversation. Like, what? You convinced me a couple of months ago that I had set Patrick's foot on fire. Because I literally didn't remember that happening, but I was like,
yes. Oh, my God.
I am missing a piece of that night, and I guess it's kind of plausible I set him on fire. Why didn't anyone stop me?
About that.
And then you, of course, told me that you were pulling my leg and lying to me about it, and I hadn't set anyone on fire. What made
that lie work was that Emily was totally playing along with me on that. And the two of you were so mean. I mean, it was, and it fit so perfectly. Like, our puzzle pieces, whatever bullshit we were pulling that night was working. And you were falling for it. It was awesome.
Because I didn't remember. There was one thing that I think was true that I didn't remember. And once you guys figured that out, you just, like,
extrapolated out. We went with it. Oh, we fucking went with it.
Like, well, then you were yelling at the dogs and you set Patrick's foot on fire. And I was like, oh. And then I had a fucking panic attack. Yeah. I was, like, texting him, like, did I set you on fire? Like, no. And I'm like, oh, well, never mind that.
That was a fun night.
Apparently my best friends are jerks. No,
your best friends are jerks. And that was... That was classic.
Tell me shit great. I've done after I've been drinking that I don't remember.
Okay, so you haven't been doing your wine with our past couple of podcasts lately, so I think that's because we're getting more comfortable with opening up our, talking about this and opening up ourselves and everything. You, when you are on the alcohol, it's fucking amazing. Because, I mean, and obviously you guys as listeners don't know the Kalina that I know. She is... one of the smartest people I know. She's a scholar, and she knows books and big words, and she knows how to, you know, express herself and things like that. And she's also quiet and shy around people. She's just very, she doesn't talk like this normally. So she really isn't. So when she is on wine, she'll fucking scream whatever song is on at the top of her lungs and dance like nobody is fucking watching. Or dancing like a lot of fucking people are watching and you don't give a shit that they're watching. That's what it is. And it's amazing. I love it. I've been around some parts of Drunk Kalina, so I don't know.
No, that's all.
Yeah. I'm like, I haven't really seen you do anything terribly bad.
I don't think I have. I think it's
except for lighting Patrick's shoe on fire.
I did not light Patrick's
shoe. That was bad. He needed new shoes.
I can't believe you convinced me of that. That's hilarious. But I think I don't know. I think I just fear embarrassment.
Sure.
I think it might be my biggest fear. Yeah. And so... like, even if it's something small, like, it's amplified by alcohol. And sure. So I remember the next day as way more embarrassing than it actually probably was. Because I've never heard a story where I've been like, fuck, I have to go die now. That's inexcusable.
But your character is nothing. I mean, you're just more open when you are, which is nothing is wrong with that.
No, it's still hard. I mean, I experience it as, like, embarrassment. Yeah, regardless.
I can't get drunk. Like, I could drink, but then I go straight from taking 3 sips of wine to, like,
puking.
Sick. So I can't.
Nauseous, ill.
I think I'm allergic to alcohol.
Well, you are Asian.
I am Asian. I get the Asian glow, and then I just, like, keel over and die after I drink. So, like, I've never gotten to that point where I have. I've gotten tipsy and stuff, and then I go immediately to sick. So, for me, I don't really have any of those.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, I guess.
So, you're a lot of fun, whether you drink or not.
Well, thanks.
We'll see. This actually kind of brings up, I think we've kind of touched around, we have a new segment we wanted to introduce.
Yay!
This episode, and we call it Fun Fuck Facts.
Fun Fuck Facts.
Yay. So we actually have an official fact for you.
References and everything.
I have a source.
Yep.
So this week's Fun Fuck Fact is that communication during sex leads to better sex.
Mm-hmm.
People who communicate during sex have better sex. So this fact comes from an article in the Live Science Contributor, and it was written by Stephanie Pappas, and it's from September of 2012, so I guess not super recent. The article just really quickly goes over a study where researcher Elizabeth Babin, an expert on health communication at Cleveland State University in Ohio, wanted to explore communication and sex. And so she did a survey with 207 people and kind of talked to them about how comfortable they feel communicating about their sex lives with their partners, communicating satisfaction, communication during sex, verbal versus nonverbal cues, and how confident they were about their sexual relationship, the aspects of their sexual relationship. And anyway, her survey revealed that anxiety about talking about sex can actually spoil one's sexual enjoyment, that anxiety and is linked to less communication and less satisfaction overall.
Yeah, yeah.
So trying to push through some of those anxieties to have communication will help people, have better sex. I think that makes a lot of sense.
Absolutely.
And then there's this one piece of this article I really wanted to quote at the end. Sexual communication is a skill, and we are not all well trained in that skill.
Period.
And I think that's fucking
that's so
100% true.
So true.
Like, too many of us grew up in households, either religious or non-religious, that kind of treated sex as negative, as
faux pas,
dirty, like it's taboo. And in doing so, that's a real disservice to us because it does make it harder. Like, I don't talk. Like, I know I'm sitting here on a fucking podcast talking about sex, but this is very out of my norm.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I don't communicate well with partners about sex. I don't. I don't like asking for what I want. I don't like telling them. I don't want to talk. I 100% rely on nonverbal communication in the bed. I do.
Yeah. I am.
It's hard.
I am the opposite.
Well,
I am the complete opposite. I don't have a problem with telling people what I want, whether or not I get it. I'm not trying to come off as like a brat or anything like that.
No,
it's just
even the fact that you think saying that makes you come off as a brat is part of the conditioning.
Yes, there it is.
Don't be
yes.
forceful and say what you want.
Yeah.
I apparently internalized the conditioning way more than you did.
Dan and I are very open in our relationship. He is so adventurous and he's always willing to try new things. And I mean, we've talked about how many sexual partners each one of us had. I mean, fuck. The first time we slept together, he asked me how I wanted it. I know I talked about that in one of the last podcasts. But then, like, after that, I think it was within the next day or two where I was like, yeah, you and I are going to go get tested for STDs. I said that to him, and he's like, okay. How often does that come up in a conversation when you first meet somebody or before you sleep with them or before? I mean, that article talks about the embarrassment or hesitation about telling your partner to wear a condom or anything like, you know, things like that. That should never be a problem. If you want to be safe for yourself and for your partner, then you should be able to ask for that kind of stuff, you know? Dan and I are 15 years in. We have nothing to hide from each other. But even in the beginning, it wasn't anything. Like, we were so adventurous in the beginning. You know, our sex life is great now. And we did use condoms in the beginning. That's when we explored all sorts of things in the beginning. But we did. We went and got tested because I was like, no, this is what we're going to do. We have to do this. We have to be safe for ourselves. And I think it was sort of going back into our last podcast when I was going on and on about love and believing in love. And you just know when you know. I knew at that moment. So that's why I was like, okay, you're going to go get tested. I'm going to go get tested. And we were good and everything was fine. And it's been great since. So I don't know that I could say that about my past sexual partners. I think maybe when I was younger, not so much. I didn't. But I also wasn't that experienced and I didn't know how to communicate that. Now I don't give a shit. Now I'm like, this is what's happening. This, it's either no or...
If you hadn't gotten there after 15 years, that would be concerning.
It would be a little concerning.
But yeah, it's... No, I think it's important. That's why I wanted to share that fun fuck fact
fun
with everyone.
Fuck fact.
So push past anxiety and feeling of, you know, insecurities and try to have communication, more communication with your partners.
Right, yeah.
Because it'll help you in the long run, according to science.
Yeah. You will actually be happier with your sex
lives. You'll have better sex.
Yeah, according to
science. And it's not embarrassing.
And we are about science.
Sure. We're super about
we
science.
We are.
Hey.
Reading.
This is one article. Yeah.
All of us.
I'm sorry.
They're like fake the demon fake.
And the angel then came to the room and fought. I'm like, yeah, science, bitches.
Science, bitches.
Hey, no one said your books had to be about science.
It's funny.
I'm really proud we actually have the article to quote. Because it's only like the 700th time I've been like, this one thing I read. I can't tell you where I read it or what it was about. Yeah. You're going to have to believe me that I read something.
Those we call Kalina facts.
Kalina, this is not a clue. This is a real
This is a real fact.
It's a fun fuck fact.
A fun fuck fact.
Okay. What's next?
Well, I think we've already, without introducing the kiss and tell segment of our, we've already touched on that, which is the drunken sex and the communication between
drunkenness and alcoholness and Kalina being embarrassed. Us almost only have sex drunk.
I've had sex while intoxicated, but I was fully aware that I was having sex.
Yes. No, I'm not saying blackout drunk.
Yeah.
I am. That's not sex, guys.
That's
something else.
That is something else.
You gotta question that. No. But intoxicated.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah. It's good.
Yeah. All right.
I think we've hit on everything.
We've definitely wrapped up this book. Yeah. I think we've told you.
Well, okay, let's just say the ending real quick.
Oh, yes, we do.
We have to at least tell them how they...
So, here's the thing. Turns out, Roman is a Nephilim. Nephilim? Nephilim.
I was thinking... Nephilim? Niffler from Harry Potter the whole time.
He's not a Niffler. He is the offspring of an angel and a woman.
Oh, that's... Right.
Just a human woman.
It was an angel. A demon. A fallen angel.
Oh. He was an angel. Nephilim? Because they're real. They're not real. But they're from the Bible. They're...
Okay.
In theology, they exist. And they are the Nephilim.
Yeah.
Nephilim. One of those two. The way she said it in the book, I didn't think was right.
Okay.
But that's a side note. I could be wrong. Anyway, it's an angel and a human woman. Have an offspring, and it's a Nephilim. It's half angel, half human.
And they're destructive. They have no agenda.
It differs. They just don't fit nicely into the hierarchy, so they tend to be problems. Like, people, like, angels don't accept them. They can't go up and be heavenly bodies, and hell doesn't want them.
Right.
So they're cast off between the two, but they're not mortal, like humans. So no one likes them. Like, it'd be a sad life.
They don't have anywhere to go.
They don't have anywhere to go. They have weird powers. They live forever. Ugh. And so some of them become bitter and like hate both sides. So yeah. Roman is a Nephilim.
Yes.
And he is actually in Seattle to kill Carter the Angel because he likes to be destructive. He killed the vampire in the beginning. He killed the angel. I guess we didn't mention these things happened. They happened.
Well, he did say that there's destruction that's happening in the city, and that's what's happening. He is the one doing that.
Hugh the imp. He's doing all of this because he's trying to just upset the balance, the hierarchy that really has like always looked down on him.
Well, yeah.
Upset the status quo.
And his dad is Jerome, who is the boss of the city for the...
Turns out his dad is the archdemon. Mm-hmm. Well, he was an angel who...
Fallen angel.
And is now an archdemon. And so at first they think that, anyway, it doesn't matter. He's
the antagonist in the book. He actually came to Seattle to, he wanted to kill Georgina.
He was going to kill her first.
Killing the lesser immortals.
He starts there and then he works up to the big immortal.
But he falls for her.
He fell in love with her because she didn't like the system. Like, he could tell she was a succubus who didn't like being a succubus.
Yeah.
Who didn't try very hard to do her job. She cared about humans. She cared about people. And so he ended up falling in love with her. And so then his plan got all weird. And she, like, agreed to run away with him if he promised to stop killing.
Yeah.
Because she really doesn't like violence or death.
She's not
too much in her long life. And he couldn't promise that. He said, no, I have to kill Carter. And she didn't want him to know how well she knew Carter and that he was a friend, but she didn't want to let him kill Carter because Carter had been good to her throughout the book. And so she basically brought down the hammer.
She did.
She brought them down. Well, they didn't kill him.
He escapes, but his twin sister gets...
Which is unfair. That was like bullshit, right? Like, he's the one doing all the damage throughout the book, and he gets the fuck out, and she dies.
Yeah.
I was pissed about
that. Well, and Jerome seemed like he was just like, he just let him go. That's his son.
Yeah, but he killed his daughter. She wasn't the one who killed anyone. Right. That was bullshit.
Right, yeah.
Like, I understand we were maybe supposed to not like her, because she had had all of those fights.
I didn't like her.
I know, but Georgina. It wasn't fair that she's the one who got... Like, he brought the this shit down no, on for himself. Sure.
Yeah.
And he brought her over to the house and she gets killed. Like,
yeah.
I was mad at him for that. Mm-hmm. And I know, like, obviously, I think they're building, like, he's going to come back in some future
book. Yeah, he is.
And wreck fucking havoc. Yeah. Because he had said that the only person in his life was his sister and now she's dead.
Now she's dead.
So that's, but I was mad that she got killed. Yeah. And not him.
It was unfair. But this, I mean, and then towards the end of the book, Seth actually finds out he sees the angel, he sees the demon.
He's there for the big fight.
He's there for the, and then.
He sees Georgina shapeshift into like a tiger and like attack.
And, yeah. And so he's seeing all this and he's not supposed to see any of this. He's not supposed to see at least Carter, the angel, or.
Both of them look the same because they're angels and demons are the same.
So something. And so, but she, you know, she tells them not to look at it. They end up kissing and then, not, well, she's trying to.
She's almost dead. She's almost dead and because she used up all her power trying to save him. And then she also needs to distract him because if a human looks at a angel or demon in their true form,
yeah,
it can kill them.
It can kill them.
So she distracts him from looking at Carter and Jerome in their full angel demon form. And she also kisses him because she's literally on the verge of death.
Yeah.
And she needs some of his
life. She needs his soul life. A little bit.
But then she sucks a little too much.
She sucks a little bit too much.
And almost kills him. She realizes.
Yeah. But she does find out in the moment that she's kissing him. She gets those thoughts because she could read what's going on in their minds. She finds out that Seth is in love with her. He loves her. And so then the fighting ends and Jerome and Carter are like, we've got to wipe his memory. And she's like, no, don't take that away from him. I can't have you guys take that away from him. And so they spare him and now he just knows.
Yep.
And it's,
he knows what she is,
he knows what they are
existing. And that's how the book ends with,
yeah,
he, we think, still maybe loves her.
I think he does.
And oh yeah, he said that, he put that nice thing in her book about the thing.
Yes.
I can't remember, so I'm just saying the word thing.
It was I can't remember the names, but it was the parents of Achilles.
Yes.
And their story about,
she's a sea nymph and he's a human and she shapeshifts and he loves her and he chases her and they get married.
Yes.
Yes. So it's kind of like
him and her.
Giving her the hint that he loves her.
He's not going to give up.
He's not running away just because she's a succubus,
shapeshifting,
life-sucking demon. You should run away from those. They're not great.
Yeah, those aren't great. Stay away from
life-sucking demons. Anyway, so, spoiler alert, that's how the book is.
Yeah. Rating.
Rating.
Let's do our dirty rating.
Dirty pleasure rating.
I mean, I liked this book a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I would definitely be interested in reading the next couple of them. But,
it's a seven!
It's gonna go to seven wins it.
Seven. I literally don't want to give it any other number.
Yeah, our rating system is all wackadoo. It's... It's a seven. It was a sexy.
Her
seven,
sex scenes are
just
great.
Like the other ones.
Like,
they are
descriptive, steamy sex.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
They're good.
Nice. Embarrassed to listen to at work. Sex scene.
Oh no, I got off on these ones for sure.
Yeah, I was sitting there like,
These ones were good. For
so,
sure, I liked
good
them.
Detailed sex scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Yeah, it's a seven. I'm sorry. I don't know how else to rate books.
Apparently, we're going to have to figure that out.
Unless I hate it.
Right. Then it's a fucking
then
two.
Then it's not a seven.
Oh my God. That's so funny.
I don't know. You guys, I don't know.
All right. On to our next book. We are going to read Sorceress's Pet. We're not quite sure how to say that.
Sorceress's Pet
by Noah Zyro. We also don't know how to say that. We're thinking Zyro? Zyro?
Cairo?
Cairo?
It's X-I-R-E-A-U. E-A-U. So, typical.
Something like.
We're trying something new, guys.
Mm-hmm.
We decided we wanted to try an LGBTQ plus
book. We apologize if we got that wrong. We don't know.
I feel like I left one off. I'm sorry.
But, yeah. So, this is a female-female, and it's...
As far as we know from the description.
From the description.
We're pretty sure it is.
And there is no narrator. We are reading this book on our own.
It's a Kindle book.
So, But, so we're going to try it out and talk about it next time.
It looks short, so it might be a fast read. we're not
just
sure.
Like
123 pages. So we'll see. It's like a novella.
Maybe we picked a novella instead of... That's okay. Maybe we'll have more topics to talk about by then. But
we're given something. We wanted to try something different.
Yeah.
Get into a genre we hadn't touched on yet.
Yep. Absolutely.
Join us next time for that. I also wanted to thank Jim Townsend. He is one of our friends' husbands who does beautiful music. He's a guitarist and a singer, and he did our intro and outro music, yes, which we are now adding to all of our podcasts. And just a big thank you, Jim Townsend, for all that wonderful music.
It is beautiful, beautiful. Thank you so much, sir. We ask you guys to join us. Send us an email at dirtybooks@gmail.com. We're on Twitter and Facebook at dirtybooks. And we also have a SoundCloud and a WordPress that is going to be linked in. Obviously, you guys are here, so you already know where you're at. Obviously, you so I don't us. Need to repeat it. Also, I don't remember it by heart. So you can find it. So thank you for coming back. And I do want to end on this note from a quick quote by Carter the Angel. Yes. And his words of wisdom are, no one is beyond being loved. So allow yourselves to be loved, people. Talk about sex, get it on, and be loved.
Yes. All right. Well, thank you.
Yep. This is We're Reading Dirty Books. I'm Sayla.
And I'm Kalina.
Have a good night.
Night.
Yeah, you've been listening to Reading Dirty Books with Kalina and Saylet. Be sure to tune into the next episode. Get some more of your dirty books read to you. And if you're listening on a format that allows you to give a rating, please do that for them.